There she is.
Welcome to the Everyday Sniper. You got Frank at Sniper's Horn. And Riley's here. You can hear her. She's kind of saying stuff. She wants to be on the podcast for the first time. She's like the range dog help. She's all into it. She's like, yay, I'm a good girl. So say hi, Chris. Chris is here.
Fired up, ready to go. Hello, everybody.
She is fired up and ready to go. So we're going to jump right into it. Some really, you know, there was some stuff went around this week, but it was more gossipy and all good. But no, we had our class, our first rifle craft, sniper's hide, joint class this week with a bunch of shooters. And it was the perfect mix of experience to go through the course and how we had it. We got to, I mean, the quick win part, we'll get into in a sec, but was like perfect. We had, so Friday we had like 6 to 8 mile an hour winds. Saturday we had 12 to 18 mile an hour winds. And then on Sunday, it dropped back down to 6. And then when we were getting ready to leave in the afternoon, it jumped back up to 12. So it was almost like the wind knew we were going to have this class.
Yeah.
It was like, hey, I'm going to help you guys out so we can demonstrate these concepts. So I thought it was a success for the first class. We're opened up Cameo because the next one we're doing is at Cameo. And I just put that up, and yeah, we're ready to roll, man. What do you think?
I think we put a lot of time into going through what the sequence was going to be, what the components were going to be, boil it down so it wasn't too overwhelming, and then hit what we felt was important for fundamentals, tripod, positional, and wind, and it worked great.
Yeah, I mean, the order of operation, I adjusted in the PowerPoint. There was a little bit of order operation change I had to make. So it was great to go through it. As soon as I saw it, it was like, oh shit, there was actually, we had added some stuff to the presentation. And for some reason, I doubled up the tripod stuff in the fundamental side. So it was like, we were going through the slides with everybody and it was like they repeated and it was like, oh shit, this is a repeat. And I cleaned that up and fixed it. But yeah, I really do think our order of operation and how we presented the information, way different than a Mark class, but easy enough to, like you said, not overwhelm the students.
Yeah, I think not having the perspective of other structures, but having a lot of questions, it's easy for people to identify a need or a want that sounds like it would be easy, but it overcomplicates things. And what this did was boil it back down to some fundamental components that without fixing those, the other stuff just doesn't work. And it really is fundamentals, positional, and then wind.
Well, it, you know, an interesting thing, and to go to the fundamental side first and to kind of focus on that part, everybody, like the first four guys right out of the gate were immediate trigger tappers. Tap, 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 tap on the trigger. And they all do it. And when you corrected, like I corrected Doyle, the first guy on the line, and he was one of the older gentlemen that was with us, but he's a comp shooter. And he said to me, he goes, I tapped the trigger because of time. And it's, you know, I'm on the clock, so I can't follow through. And it's like, no, dude, we work on the clock all the time. I said, the follow through is the necessary part because of that fundamentals. And you're, think of a musical instrument. You're playing the same note over and over. If you take that trombone, or not trombone, but trumpet. If you take that trumpet and tap that note and come up, that's another sound. But if you hit that plunger and hold it down, that's a note. Plunger down and back up, another note. Same thing you're doing with the trigger, because that's a metal component connected to a metal component connected to the barrel, and everybody talks barrel harmonics. So if you're messing with the trigger, you're also messing with your harmonic node. And that's kind of what we did. And we cleaned those guys up. And the dude even like wrote himself a note, follow through, follow through, follow through. The follow through doesn't change their group size. Their follow, it makes better in a way. We cleaned up, because that you should probably talk about. You posted the first day paper and how we went through paper on the first day. We created, and I'm going to print this eventually, but with Chris's stickers and my stickers, we created a single sheet for each student. I moved from a board with 10 stickers on it and shoot your group to you get a board, you get a board, you get a board, more handgun style. And then you're going through your drills, but at the end you can see the results of start to finish because the fundamental eval is on there all the way down to the last paper drill we do at the end of the first day. Yeah. Right? Yeah, so you made a post on Facebook about that, so you could probably go into it.
Yeah. I think that this touches not only on that, but also on what was mentioned earlier about bringing things back to center and focusing on some core principles, because it's too easy to rush ahead and think that that's going to solve a problem, but it adds three or four. So when we did the fundamental assessment, we had five shots from various positions and took a look at the group size. And while we were going through that, I identified each individual shooter's issue so that we could address them specifically as individuals. Then they got to work on it. And then by the end of the class, we had a repeat of those fundamentals and we were able to see the change that took place after really feeling and understanding those components. So, when we go to the trigger slap, it makes sense, and I could relate to and empathize with the idea of, I need to go fast, so I'm going to slap my trigger so I go fast. And if you think that that's the case, then you'll do it. But realizing that it doesn't have an effect on your shooting, but could add other things, doesn't usually cross your mind. I think that a lot of people want to build and break positions quickly, so they practice throwing their bag and their rifle down, and they get a shot off very fast, and then they lay there. So they're reinforcing I'm going to hurry down, I'm going to do this thing, and then I'm going to lay there because the clock stopped with my shot. Then if you have them lay down, do the same thing, but then transition to kneeling and then standing, it's not an even split that correlates to their build and break time. And they get positional shifts because they're now transitioning from another position to another position rather than going straight at...
Hey, get your...
Straight at the position.
Sorry, the dog's playing. Yeah. She's in play mode.
if you're practicing just going straight at your position with all your gear in hand and you have a good group, it might not stay the same if you're coming out of a group position into another position and the speed might not be the same. And so we're looking at that and identifying shifts that are happening as a result of what they're doing. And we were able to clean it up. Everybody, I didn't look, everybody took an inch off their group, but I think the easier thing to say is that by the fundamental analysis after that component of it, everybody's group size was cut in half.
Yeah, for sure. That was, and even I did the eval at the end with everybody. And you can see the main cleanup. You know what I mean? Because we did that final eval at 3 o'clock with people just to look at what do they need to go home with. And there was only one guy that kind of threw a tap in, maybe, two out of five shots. He didn't follow through. The rest of them cleaned up really well. And then even like on the win side and the target side, the hit percentage was definitely increased.
Absolutely. And at day three, the fundamental test was done on a target that was a little bit bigger than their group size, but they also had to deal with wind. And so now we were testing them not only on their fundamentals relative to their points of aim, but also their ability to read the wind in a zone that was appropriate for their wind reading ability.
Yeah, no, for sure. And then like we can jump into Saturday, then the wind. So with the gravity ballistics, we gave them some basic gravity ballistic stuff, but the wind was so crazy. Like I said, going to 18 miles an hour. And then we're able to shoot all the way out with everybody and go through and kind of talk the craft quick win because it so simplifies. I'm not going to get into it. You need to come to the class. But the nice thing was, first off, Chris goes into the cone of fire, where we are with our individual shooting, our group shooting, our weapon system, and then the win component and those fundamentals that all add to your group size. Well, the wind was so crazy from 12 to 18 miles an hour. Managing that is a little bit because you're getting pounded by it for 8 hours of the day you're outside and the wind is whipping on you. So that has a mental effect to it as well. And then, you know, we're talking tripods because this class was an equal split day one as well between shooting prone and shooting tripod. We wanted them off their belly. We wanted them shooting tripod. And even, you know, Gabe had kind of said, he's like, man, I'm knocking the 12 and 1300 yard target standing up on my tripod on that third day. And it's like, yeah, we don't differentiate between prone and tripod anymore. We just shoot the target as if we're going to shoot the target.
Right. Right. Fundamentals are fundamentals. And so if you have that cone of fire brought down, you really shouldn't need to prioritize a position based on your ability to shoot. Your ability should be the same. But you don't see it until you get on tripods and see that your group might open up or you might have a shift or you might not. A fundamental that could have been hidden because the ground is covering up some of those errors you get on
the
tripod.
I like that you mentioned that, Matt, the ground masking that natural point of aim and the ground masking certain errors that come up because we're absorbed into that ground. And then when it's just your 2 feet and three legs, you right. see it.
Yeah, yeah. It's kind of like adding weight to your rifle covers up some fundamentals, but adding your rifle to the ground prone versus getting it off the ground, now all of a sudden you're exposing the opportunity to fundamentals to create a shift. And so it's great for learning and teaching because somebody might shoot great groups prone and you're seeing something, but it's not having an effect. But as soon as they get off the ground, now you're seeing the effect of that.
And that's huge. So what Chris just said is that there's a person prone, right? They may have a hand load. They have a really light trigger and they're shooting excellent groups. But we see a fundamental flaw. Well, if we change it, there's 50-50 when you change that fundamental flaw with somebody in the beginning, their group will go bigger for a minute because now they're relearning the new skill. And so it's sort of a like build and break again. It's a breakdown of what you were doing and a rebuilding of a new method, you know, following through on the trigger. And so when they get off their belly and they're on the tripods like that and we're watching them, well, we not only see what they did wrong fundamentally in prone, but now I look at the recoil pulse of the rifle. In the direction it's moving is not linear, not straight, whatever you want to, however I want to word it. There's a wiggle in the recoil. And that's where the problem comes in. And now that wiggle throws you off every second shot, every third shot. And that's what we need to clean up. We're fixing that wiggle once you get off your belly.
Right. And because what you're doing prone has fundamental flaws that are neutralized by what you're doing, it's easy to get trapped into, well, I'm going to just shoot prone all the time. I think there's kind of two groups of shooters. They have a flaw that's masked. They shoot tiny groups prone. You get them positional. They shoot paper and their group opens up. That's where you see those two groups of people. One person says, this position or positional shooting sucks. I'm going to go back to my belly because I shoot well. Mm-hmm. And the other one goes, this is awesome. It just highlighted an area that I could work on. Or it highlights
something new to do that I can see the improvement.
Yeah.
Yeah, because we want to see improvement. And that's the thing. Why someone goes to prone or why someone goes to a bench. Just like Chris said, it's a tiny little group. And I see it and I'm happy and impressed with it. Well, some people look at the challenge of, well, I moved to this position and my group's not tiny and great anymore. Let me keep working on it. until it is. And that's the kind of guy that is analyzing what he's doing. He wants to improve, and he's going to be a great student. And I think everybody, we had that. Everybody was looking for that improvement. And even the transitions between where they shot prone and where they went back to the tripod, while individualized, was enough to see them doing so well on the tripod that they stuck with the tripod and stayed on it even at the further targets.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, the groups, you know, it's very common when you haven't been doing positional to have slight point of impact shifts with positions because your body's relating to the rifle differently, but they all came to center and their groups got smaller. And it was good. It was enough success that they wanted to keep doing it. And I think that's a weird balance, because if you don't have enough success, at some point you're going to want to go back to what you did. But if you don't, but you also want to have some failure that motivates you to want to improve. And it seemed like every single person in the class was so hungry to improve that they wanted to, even when their minds were fried, they were still wanting to work on it.
And we brought that up. That was a big point for me with this class, because we've seen information overload, right? You can overdo it and just give them so much. And part of it is trying, like my thing of simplifying, right? We're simplifying this stuff to gravity ballistics. Chris has simplified the quick wind and making it easier. And that was at one point we were in the classroom and going over cone of fire and going over the craft quick wind. And, you know, the questions come in because you're in front of a whiteboard and paper and you're writing stuff. And so it's like numbers, numbers, numbers. Everybody's getting flooded with a number. I mean, I took a picture and sent it to you, the whiteboard, because it looked like a madman drew it. You know, there were so many lines and so many angles. Now you could see exactly what we were doing, but it still looked like a madman drew it. Well, then when we walked out the door and I said, Chris, we got perfect wind. We got perfect conditions right here. This is money. Now I want you to go out in front with a rifle and just do your wind as if you did it and just talk it out loud. And it was like a minute 50 for you to explain it slowly, step by step. And it's like, okay, here's a 2-minute drill lesson, or, you know, outside, A, B, C, D, E, and boom, these guys are like, light bulb, I got it. And then you saw the hits, you saw everybody doing, you know, their wind speed over gun number and what they were doing, and it clicked at that point for them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and their wind calls were very good, despite the fact that the winds were strong, the angles were moving, and paying attention to the speed, the angle, how that relates to their gun, how that's going to affect their shot. And it didn't matter whether they were on their tripods or on the ground prone. They were hitting targets, and we were able to measure the amount that they were hitting and not hitting. So we have some very big plates out there, and it's not because we want people to hit a plate. It's because we want to be able to see where the impact was and measure to the point of aim exactly to say, this is where your fundamental error fills up. This is where your wobble fills up. This is where your wind reading fills up. And we're able to measure that down using the reticles because we have these essentially plates where we can take the point of aim, subtract the point of impact, and say, okay, if we consider the rifle accuracy, the ammo, if we consider your fundamentals, and we consider your wind reading, this is the zone that bullet should have hit. And they were all hitting the targets in probably a smaller zone than I would have expected somebody in 3 days to be able to do that. I think that, you know, most shooters, if you give them the time, they can usually get within 4 miles an hour. And going to 3 takes a little bit more work. Getting under 3 takes a lot of work. And they were all shooting it under 2. So being under 2 miles an hour of error for wind in 3 days of practice.
And we did, because we had the conditions, it was a better focus on the wind. You know what I mean? We had great wind shooting conditions to learn with. And so that was a key component for me There was, yeah, the learning was good. And then it was great because Sunday the winds dropped down to 6 and it was really mellow. Everything was good. It was nice. And at that point, I redid the gravity ballistics with them, doped them out to 800 again. And to get into the wind and the aerodynamic jump and all that stuff, I have a really great, so the 80 grain Berger Federal load for my Valkyrie, there's an 80.5 grain load, that's 2,900 feet per second. I have a left hand gain twist Bartlin Valkyrie, my bolt gun Valkyrie, and I've talked about this ad nauseum. You guys probably are tired of hearing it, but I just love that gun. So I'm out my bolt gun Valkyrie. This new load is doped, and I can pick and choose where I'm going to hit. Like, I could take a plate, and I could say head, shoulder, you know, dick. I can hit them wherever I want with that gun.
Frank will go out, and occasionally a prairie dog will pop its head up at 10, 1,100 yards, you know, 1,000, 1,100 yards, and he'll take this Valkyrie up, and he'll take a shot. He'll either hit it, and a prairie dog at that distance is like,
yeah, they're less like than a 10 inches. Yeah, they're 10 inches tall.
Or he'll see his impact and follow up and hit the stupid prairie dog second shot, unless they hide after the first one. This thing is,
yeah,
it's like a movie gun based on how often it hits exactly, you know, where you're trying to hit. And you think, man, guns shouldn't be that accurate.
Yeah, yeah. And the Valkyrie is, and it's a nice balance, nice size. Well, anyway, we added 1,000-yard targets. So now on these fans of shooting, I have from 300 to 1,000 fans with individual plates and stuff. So within the wind, getting almost a full value, I'm on this 1,000-yard plate, and I know I'm 7.8 in a normal wind. Well, in the 18-mile-an-hour wind, and it's coming from the right, I had to go to 8.0. So I can see it 2/10, and I watched it. I'm a high chest shooter. Okay, I don't necessarily center punch an IMSEC. I'm more of a high chest guy. So for me, a high chest, I'll throw one over a shoulder if I'm not careful. So 7.8 is my dope, and we got 18-mile-an-hour winds, and I take a shot, and I see it go over the shoulder, or actually it dropped low on that one. So I'm high chest, 7.8, and I'm hitting in the kidney. And I'm like, well, okay, wait a minute. 7.8 should be high chest. I go to the kidney. I go 8.0. So I go to 8.0. Now I'm back to high chest again. Well, that's working out in these heavy winds. And I'm like, well, wind's coming from the right. And it's dropping me down. So I need 2/10 more. So 1,000 yards, 18 miles an hour wind. Valkyrie at 2,900 with an 80 grain bullet. I saw 2/10 of elevation variation with my rifle. Now, next day, take it back, and that's when I show up, go over the shoulder. I put 8.0 on. I go over the shoulder. I'm like, nope, back to 7.8. Drop it down to 7.8. Center punch, center punch, center punch on the 7.8. So I was able to say, with my gun coming from the right in that 18-mile-an-hour winds, it was 2/10. And I've mentioned this to you before. We had this conversation when you were doping your rifle that it's like 12 miles an hour over your zero where I see that aerodynamic jump stuff noticeable. Okay? And right there, if I have a 6-mile-an-hour zero, which that's generally in my direction where I'm at, 12-mile-an-hour gusts going to 18, there's my 12 to 18, I'm seeing 2/10 of elevation. Now, the plate is 5/10 tall. Okay, so put that into context. There was a couple times, like you did one just by accident with a wrong dope, but headshot or the tall, because we have a plate over the IPSIX normally. So the little 1 MOA plate that sticks up high like a halo, I caught it once, you caught it once, and so she's fine.
Yeah, I was shooting 140. What were they? 140, 143s. And then I put in a box of the 100 grain 6.5. And the speed was much faster. The zero was the same. So I just held that dope. And it was exactly 1.2 mils higher. But exactly 1.2 mils higher than the center of the plate was our small plate, right? In a vertical line. So the wind call was good, but the elevation was, 1.2 mils, too much. But we happen to have a plate there. Bang.
Yeah, and I went to multiple plates. It was really nice to be able to go and say, okay, I'm going to shoot that one that's 15 degrees to the north. I'm going to shoot that one that's 30 degrees to the south. And so looking at that, the two tents kind of carried in the 18, and I told Chris and others, I see the change at 12 miles an hour over your zero. Okay, it needs that much before you start to notice it.
And we're fortunate because we have a 160-degree fan, so if the wind's strong, we can often make it both right and left. We can make it 70-75% of that wind in both directions just simply by picking targets that are in the right angles.
Right, making an adjustment and doing that. And that's what we were able... See, because the nice thing now is the class is structured that we're going through, but a lot of it is sort of individualized where we don't have to hover over you. And I'm shooting a couple rounds alongside people. I'm looking at Chris's wind. I'm making shots with it and getting nice centered hits. It's like, fuck, this thing is working. I mean, at one point, I did a shot and it kind of mathed out to 4.2 mils. And I was like, holy fuck, dude, 4.2. And I was shooting 1,000. And sure as shit, if not like 4.0 was right there. And it just worked. I mean, we're in heavy winds. We're shooting, the smaller, lighter stuff. I mean, that's my jammy, basically. You guys hear it. And it calculated out far. And it was like, fuck, it's every bit of 4 mils of wind for me to hit that. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, it makes perfect sense.
Yeah, sometimes the winds are strong enough where when you do the math before you've shot at that distance, you think, that's humongous.
Yeah, yeah.
But then you shoot and it's like, are you kidding me?
Yeah, it works. It's like, holy shit, I'm way out here and it worked. Right, right. And then the one thing we did have, and I want to kind of get into this, we're kind of getting there, MOA. We had three people with MOA scopes, and a lot of this math for the quicker wins, the easier way to do a wind with a gun number, with anything, is in mils.
Yeah.
So we had to play around, and we found some numbers. We're playing with it where we can reduce the, at the end of the day, in MOA, it's 10 miles an hour. You're either going to do the rule of nines. The rule of nines is the Army method at 9 miles an hour, or the British method, which is 10. And they're both longer worm formulas. I mean, they're designed to be a shortcut. And the British method is probably the easiest. The rule of nines fell away pretty quick. That was the Army Special Forces used the rule of nines with the 308 and an MOA scope. And that gave away the British method is what preceded it. But we landed on a couple things. We have to kind of sit down with a calculator and play it a little bit. Like at one point on the fly, I was trying to do it like a gun number. And if I know I'm 0.6 in mils, that's 2 MOA. And then I divided that 2 MOA by wind speed for 6 miles an hour. So, 6 miles an hour at 600 yards is 0.6. And that's a gun number thing. When I did that with MOA, I got a third of an inch per mile an hour. And it worked to a degree, but you had to be super precise on the angle. And so we're just kind of playing on the MOA side of how to do an easier gun number. Because honestly, if you look it up, it's 10. And 10's chunky for a gun number,
I think, when we boil things down like we did, and we like to do afterwards of, okay, there's all this other stuff, but what's at the core? The core is fundamentals. The core is positional consistency. And then it's speed and opportunity, or wind, and then speed and opportunity. And I think that one thing that came clear here is that everybody has different strengths, but also different things that slow them down. If wind's going to slow you down, you need a way to do it fast. And because wind changes pretty quickly, you want to be able to do it fast. And I think that what we demonstrated and reinforced, because we kind of already knew it, was going as slow as I possibly could and talking slow and really taking the time to show what I was doing. It took me 2 minutes to make a perfect wind call and get the shot off. After that, everything you need was from the impact. The calculations are instant.
Yeah.
So having long formulas that take you time at that point, even if you could have done it faster than 2 minutes using some sort of a formula, at that point, I don't need any of that. And I can make my calls as fast as I can shoot, as long as I know the distance. And we need a way to do it that quickly with MOA as fast. Because if you have to stop and think and recalculate,
well, if you go back in time, anybody listening to this, if you had any experience with snipers, you know, 2016 or earlier, really, or 2012 down to the, you know, 2012 to 2002, if you look in that, they carried a booklet on a key ring of cheat sheets. And they had them in, you know, density altitude, and you were basically flipping through a key ring. I mean, you might as well have been a security guard at night with how many cheat sheets you had. And the idea we're trying to do is to eliminate the cheat sheet so you just look at it, and in your head you're doing these third grade math that's really no more than counting on your fingers, and that's how quick that you're able to get these things off.
Yeah, because I think in application, that's important, right? You want to be able to set up, you want to be able to shoot. But let's just say, you know, my guess is I could probably do it without talking through it in about a minute or less. But let's just say it was 2 minutes, and then I have everything that I need. Now, the other side to that is all I really need to do is take a shot at any distance,
yeah,
and I can carry that anywhere to any distance. So if it's a matter of first round precision, or can you take a follow-up shot, and does a follow-up shot have to be exactly where you're shooting? No, it doesn't. You could shoot anywhere and carry that to any other distance. So if you have a suppressor and you have the ability to get a shot off, you know, we're talking about less than 15 seconds to have a hit on impact with a shot anywhere else prior to get what you need. And so it comes down to application, but the speed is really remarkable, because then after they get that, the wind isn't the factor. Mm-hmm. It was when we did the test of changing positions with their tripod that revealed how long it takes people to set up their positions, get stable, be familiar with your equipment. And that everybody says, I'm fine. I can build positions. I'm fine. I'm comfortable with my stuff. I'm fine. You say, okay, cool. I'm going to time you set up this position. And 5 minutes later.
Yeah. We did a great drill, man, where we had everybody up and building breaks and stuff. And we let them all go. It was on the gun command, go. And then it was like, shot off, we marked them on the board. And it was like, first shot, okay, that was this time. Next shot, that was this time. And we were able to do a series of drills. And as each one fired, we'd write the time down and then go through and look at. And it was kind of remarkable, because you saw that first one, and then the times matched up when they were building, like, it you know, they improved a little bit. Like, the first one, it took them a minute, we'll say, and then they hit, like, a 45-second mark. Well, then that 45-second carried into two other drills, and we were able to see it, 45, 45, 45, for them to build. So their overall time kind of got consistent.
Yeah.
Yeah. But
in that 45-second time that they were doing that, they could also overlay the wind stuff.
Yeah.
So now the time crunch isn't your ability to make a wind call. It's making a wind call while you're building the position and then shooting.
Right.
Now you have no delay in time. So really what the long-term thing here is that they need to work on building and breaking up their positions and building it down and developing that motor stuff, because that takes a little bit more time. Your mind is always working, so it gets fast on those wind.
And like gravity ballistics, okay? Gravity ballistics, we're hitting the waterline and we're pre-truing as we go out. So when you're done with gravity ballistics, you have a trued track to center line of every target. Well, then you overlay that information and you put it into your Kestrel. And once you match the Kestrel to that, your Kestrel is like next level ready to go. Chris's Wind trues as you go. It's giving you information that's allowing you to translate what's happening to other targets. So even when we're putting this in the app and you're going to see it, but what it's going to do in the app is going to be, because you talked to them mostly about it. I missed that phone call a little bit. But the app is going to demonstrate what's going on and sort of true you as you go. And they're supposed to be putting in a one-shot win dialogue that will then plug into Chris's Wind and give you the info that you can carry out to a bunch of places.
Right. And it gets better the more you shoot and put in your impact. So if you were shooting and it was next to you and you put, you know, I hit at 0.4 because you have to put in data from your reticle, hit at 0.4, bang, now it just got better.
Right.
And then you take another shot at some other distance, some other direction, bang, your wind got refined. And so it's actually getting more accurate over time. And I think one of the problems with just columning out your dope and just trying to carry those columns is that first there's error in the columns, and then there's error in probably in how you took the wind. So if you get a hit in a column, let's say you have 2 mile an hour, 3 mile an hour brackets, you've got the best you're ever going to have is 2 or 3 mile an hour error. Whereas this is going to bring you down potentially to sub 1 mile an hour at those moments.
Right. And just to not to interrupt them really quick, but that it's such a key element. On top of that, the one thing you did that I've never seen, and it just hit my head and I don't want to forget. We're looking at the wind. We're reading it. And Chris, you'll see there's photographs of everybody online, binos on bags, on the tripod. They're looking for the boil. They're looking for their information. He's diagramming the wind with the students. But he's diagramming it in a way I've never seen done before because the gusts are different. And he's pulling in the gusts and going, yeah, your constant's here. But look, when you gust, you're here. And it does. It changes. And it's like, fuck, nobody ever does that. Nobody looks at that because it's only like 5 degrees maybe, you know, where the big power comes in. And that's a thing to know where, because the wind's not a straight line. I mean, we talk about it all the time with the head and tail winds. A head and tail wind's biggest problem, is it on the left side of the plate that moment or the right side of the plate that moment? Because it's going to change. It's going to wiggle left side, right side, right side, left side, left side, right side, right side, left side, left side, right side, down the center, left side, right side, right side. You know what I mean? And that's part of the lesson.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think it's easy to think of the wind as a wave or it's coming from a constant direction. Or if you think of it as water flowing, you don't think of water flowing at different speeds with different high waves. But if you pay attention to the wind in most places, because it's essentially pressure, right? It's pressure going between high and low pockets of air. So things are heating and cooling in different places. But when, like if you boil a tea kettle, when it starts to boil, the lid starts flapping. It's not like a constant whistle at first, or it might go up and down depending on the temperature, but the pressure systems are different. So if let's say we had an 8 mile an hour wind at the time, and it was like, all right, you know, we know it's been going up or down, but right now I just can't get it to not feel anything but 8. And right after I said that, whoosh, it went to like 12 or 13. Mm-hmm. So I pulled out and we did an angle check on that. And that angle check was about 30 minutes on the clock. And so we said, okay, well, when it gusts like this, it only gusts like this for about a minute or two, then it's going to go back to the average. And so we noted that, and we noted that, and then we noted the lows, and then we put in all the angles. We made wind calls for those, and we realized, you know, sometimes it works for you and sometimes it works against you. But if you take a wind call and you base it on a high and average, and you just kind of hastily pick an angle, you're building in a ton of error to the system. And so then your expectation for impact needs to consider the likelihood that it's, you know, one thing or another. Because if it's 8, but then, you know, it's 13, that's 5 miles an hour. And 5 miles an hour, you know, in competitive distances is likely 5 tenths, right? Half a mil variation in those gusts. If you pick the angle wrong, that variation could be fairly extreme. And most, you know, most competitions we're shooting at plates that are that or a little bit smaller. Now you had shooter error and it's bigger than the plate. And
you know, well, and the guys were in Cameo this weekend and they were texting you and you saw that, like, the wind kicked a lot of people's ass. But for you and in your,
I think charge, it was target acquisition.
Yeah, that's what you told, that your charge to all them was focus on target acquisition, which they said was a big problem. But also, like, Laura was looking at the guys that she saw that were at Cameo, the more the PRS-y side of guys, and the wind kicked their friggin' ass in Cameo. And that's because, you know, it's changing directions ever so slightly, and you can't always go by, you know, that big direction of wind. You have to look at the minor as well.
Right. And to kind of circle it back, when you hear reports from competitions and you think, oh my God, I got to work on this wind thing, or oh my gosh, I got to work on target acquisition speed, or oh man, there's lots of positions in a short period of time, I better practice getting really fast. If you don't have the stuff underneath that squared away, none of that work's going to be visible, or you won't be able to capitalize on it, because first of all, you might not even be able to shoot. And second of all, you'll have so much error built in that you won't be able to see the wind. So you have to do it sequentially in order to see it. Otherwise, it's lost in the noise.
Yeah. Hey, but drop into Sniper's Hide. Ask us some questions. Go into the Podbean app. Ask us questions there. We got to hit the road 3:45. We got to do some stuff. But awesome class. Thank everybody's coming out. We're going to be doing more next month, May. It's up on Sniper's Hide now. Cameo's ready to go. We got guys signing up already. We're going to be doing a Cameo course like this. If you want to do the winds in Cameo, if you want to do the angles in Cameo, if you want to do the awesome terrain in Cameo, we're going to Cameo next month, and so we'll see you guys there. But thanks to all the students that came out. The learning was awesome. That worked out really well. The weather was picture perfect. We got guys coming in this week from Alaska, and we're going to be doing a course. We got 10 guys coming down this weekend, so we'll be doing it again. Get a hold of us, and we're getting a lot of good inquiries. A lot of people are listening and resonating what's going on. So thank you. Thank everybody who you know, pays for the classes and comes out. Classes don't work without students. So there we are. But, man, we are going next level with this. Between the gravity ballistics and simplifying that and Chris's craft quick win method, you put those two together, it's third grade, and you're going to get these hits. And then if you're a home range shooter, you got it. But if you travel, we got the way to put it in. So like Chris was saying, it gets better the more you use it. So thanks a lot. Thanks everybody again. And Chris and all that. And Riley, now she's sleeping done, so she's good.
Yeah. Look up the list on Sniper's Hide and hit us up if you have any questions.
Cool, man. Appreciate you.